On this episode of The Playbook, I have my mentor, Cynthia Kersey, CEO and founder of the Unstoppable Foundation, and you're going to learn what it takes to be unstoppable and what unconditional love and giving truly means. This is one for the records. My mentor, Cynthia Kersey, joined me and her on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I'm going to try to make it through this episode without crying because I have someone, I'm already about to tear up, that has changed my life more than anyone else. One of my mentors, I know she looks younger than me and less experienced, but that is not true. She's way older and way more experienced. It's Cynthia Kersey. She is the founder of the Unstoppable Foundation, the foundation that's most important to me in my whole life and my family. She is a entrepreneur, a philanthropic entrepreneur. She is also an author and a speaker, a motivator, and an inspiration to not only me, but to millions of people around the world. She is impacting so many people she doesn't even know about. I wanted to have her on The Playbook because more people have to have your playbook to success. Cynthia, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, David. I love you. I'm so happy to be here.
I know. This is going to be a love fest. We'll start in a more pragmatic sense about your journey and how people end up where they are. A lot of people are looking for their why, and we all are learning lessons through that journey. And you started as a normal corporate person for Sprint, right? That was really your first real corporate gig. And yet happiness maybe was surrounding you but eluding you at times, and you went through a transformation. How did you transform from the normal corporate setting of everyday life into this extraordinary, impactful life that you lead?
Well, I mean, that's a good question because, you know, I started actually as an entry-level telemarketer at Sprint and went all the way to the top, national account manager. So, you know, I've got like the corner office, I'm making a six-figure income, and I'm not inspired. And I think a lot of people get to that point. It's like, is this really all there is? And I'd always love stories about unstoppable people. And like, you know, of Disney, who's on the verge of bankruptcy every 18 months for 30 years. And people don't know the backstory. You know, they just see the success. And I decided that in 1996, I was going to quit my job, downsize my life to write my first book, Unstoppable. And I remember telling my manager, I'm going to quit. And he's like, are you serious?
Right.
You know, why would you, you're going to leave this? But, I mean, best decision of my life. One of the best decisions of my life. So I left that.
Can I ask you a question? Because I talk about different currencies, one being the monetary currency, which is the perspective that your manager had, right? Like, you, in that monetary sense, the object of energy that you put into flow to buy what you want, green card, gold card, platinum card, or black card, money, power. Then we make faithful decisions, and I always say we make faithful decisions when we extract time from it and say, what if I was living forever? Would I sit in this corner office today?
Right,
and make six figures? And I really believe that that's one of the key components to seeing where your faith lies and testing the blend. Do you have green card faith, gold card faith, platinum faith, or black card faith? And I see that decision and several decisions in my life when I have black card faith, when I'm all in.
That's right.
And the universe is going to respond the same way that Amazon responds to a black
card. Exactly.
Whatever you want.
I agree. Well, it's kind of like the only way that that the universe can really respond at the level, right, that, getting into the unknown. And that's really where the miracles can happen.
Yeah, which is, you know, your Be the Miracle campaign, the unstoppable villages and things that we've done are just, it's too much for the podcast to actually go into. But tell me the story about how your understanding of that faithful decision of that's how miracles occur to this Be the Miracle campaign that we have with Unstoppable.
Wow. Well, that's a big jump, right?
Yeah.
So I think, so basically, you know, wrote my book, Can I just kind of give a little timeline?
I need her to give me a little bit more backstory.
A little bit
more. I jumped too fast into my miracles. I got so excited about the miracle campaign.
It's miracle after miracle, really, when you say yes. And to me, it's really, where's the inspiration calling? That, to me, that is a way of inspiration. God is speaking to us, right? Inspiration is in spirit. So left a corporate job, wrote my first book, was invited, actually. Well, first off, you know that my husband and I got separated in a divorce 18 months after my brand new book came out. So, you know, and I was like, okay. And I'm a single mom now, living on a $14.95 book. And I called, right? Left all of that, you know, downsized our lives to be able to do this book. So I called my mentor, Millard Fuller, the founder of Habitat for Humanity, and told him what had happened. And he said, when you have a great pain in your life, you need a greater purpose. And I was living my purpose. I'd quit my job, cashed my entire life savings to write my first book, to inspire people to live unstoppable lives. But that purpose was not bigger than my pain.
Was your husband, was part of the difficulty that he didn't buy into your purpose?
He weren't in alignment, but he was supportive.
Okay.
So really, you know, we were just on very different paths.
Yeah. And I asked that because so many people, I don't want to contribute to fear of like, oh, well, she made this decision, I'm going to lose my husband or my wife.
Yeah, no, it wasn't okay. that.
It, yeah,
no,
it was just normal course of marriage.
It really was.
You're one of the 50% in California, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
not my choice.
Being a statistic.
Yeah, not my choice. But, you know, I'm watching and listening to that pain, and people sometimes aren't willing to do what it takes. And they won't respond to somebody when things are going and challenge, not going well, supposedly, and challenges are accumulating, to hear your purpose isn't big enough.
Right.
So many people can't hear that.
I hear you.
How did you hear that, or what would you tell someone to hear that?
Well, you know, that's interesting, because some people do want to hold on to, right, anger, blame, whatever.
Shame.
Right. I mean, the list is long, but I just resonated with it. It just felt like, wow. You have to have a purpose that's bigger than your pain. And I remember being at my mom and dad's house over the holidays when I had separated from my husband. And the first couple of days, I'm totally depressed and crying and thinking I'm going to kill myself.
Right.
You know, I have no reason to live. And then I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do next holiday season, but it is not going to be staying at my mom and dad's feeling sorry for myself. Like, I'm going to find something else. So when Millard said that, it resonated with me. I thought, oh, he's right. And I think people do have that little voice. They just aren't open to it because they're holding on to, like we said, anger or blame or whatever.
The story I love, so many people have told it, but I remember hearing, you know, a guy falls off the cliff just like you did, and you grab yourself onto this one branch, right? And then you're looking up going, help me. Anybody up there could help me.
Right.
And there's just God or whoever saying, let go.
Right.
And then most people hang on and say, is anybody else up there?
Yeah, right.
But you didn't. You literally let go. Mm-hmm. And I've been there myself. I can tell story after story to know how I got here, to make room for what I have in my life, to allow me to give to other people. Through that lesson, through that pain, you now decided to do what?
Oh my God, it's just opened up so much. So did those, you know, I raised the money. When I was speaking that first year, I raised $200,000 to build 100 houses with Habitat for Humanity. And that was like the impetus to really understanding the power of giving, because I thought I was doing something great. You know, like, wow, look what I'm doing. I'm, you know, raising all this money for these families.
Right. Ego-based giving is perfect.
Right. Whatever. It was. I mean, it made me feel good.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about giving. It is the most self-serving thing you can do, for sure. It's not like I was like, I'm so great, but it was like,
I
didn't know what it was doing for me. Like, it gave me a purpose. It helped me through my grief.
Yeah.
It gave me a reason to get out of bed.
Which is one of the most impactful things you've ever said to me as my mentor, when I decided, not to steal your thunder, to mirror what you did when you were 50. Mm-hmm. She is over 50. She hates to say it. You know, she looks younger than me. I know. But I decided you started your unstoppable foundation on your 50th birthday.
That's right.
By having a birthday party and having people give you gifts to the charity instead of you. So when I decided to do the same thing in 50 weeks, 50 parties to build these community centers for Unstoppable, your response was almost weird to me at first. And I try to say without choking up too much, it was, oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to see what happens for you.
Yeah.
Like what this is going to bring to you.
Right.
And I was like, what is she talking about? Like, bring for me? I'm not doing this for me. Like, my ego took over, right?
Really?
I'm not doing this for me.
Right.
Like, doesn't she get it? I'm not doing this for me. And yet your wisdom of, Dave, you're just going to open up so much for yourself, and I can't wait to see what happens for you.
And you even said, I remember you said to your team, be ready for the flood of favor.
Yeah.
Which I think is so beautiful because that is giving. Like that is the spiritual essence. First off, you have to give from a place of contribution, right? So like when I had my birthday party, you had yours. You're not doing it to receive, but that's just the way the law works.
Yeah.
You know, and as you give, you receive to be able, we are centers of distribution.
Yeah. And as Bob Proctor taught us both, right? In times of my life, I was trading. Like I actually would give to receive.
Right.
I wouldn't give without some sort of quid pro quo connected to it.
Right.
And when he said, you cannot, you can't trade, you have to unconditionally give. So when I was unconditionally giving and I thought my mind, body, and soul were aligned with what I wanted, and you said, well, I can't wait to see what happens for you, there was a little bit of a disconnect again. Going, no, I'm not trading this time. I'm really not.
Right.
In fact, I talked about my uncle that sat at your table. He's like, well, how much is Dave getting paid to do this? And my wife was so upset. I said, no, that's the snapshot of who I was.
Right.
Right. And I think a lot of people have a problem with the snapshot of who I was. When I was on Radio Row, one of the big interviewers was like, hey, I ran into one of your high school friends. And he's like, yeah. He goes, I'm, you know, his initial reaction was, Dave Meltzer is so full of it. And he got defensive for me. And I immediately said, no, he's right. He was my friend when I was 17 years old. And first of all, I don't know any 17-year-olds that aren't full of it.
Right.
But I continued that through my 20s. And moreover, he did say, I'm so proud of him. Because at least he was a close enough friend. I didn't know his name to see the evolution or the transformation. Right. And that's where I think everyone has true value in giving, and why I'm so involved with Unstoppable is allow yourself to have a transformation, to accelerate that transformation by learning how to receive and then giving it away unconditionally. And so you yourself now, you decide, how did you transition from the Habitat for Humanity to like saying, all right, I'm going to start my own foundation, which I think is insane, by the way.
It is. I hear you. It wasn't a purpose in the beginning.
In fact, I even look at my life, what I do as chairman of your foundation. Like, this is insane, and it's the best thing in my life, next to my children and my wife.
Well, I hear you. So it was like, I didn't really want to do that, but I, you know, I went to this, I was invited to this Kenyan Ruwer African Women Conference when my second book came out, Unstoppable Women. So I'm really looking for what's that next big philanthropic project.
Still searching a bigger purpose.
A bigger, yeah, bigger opportunity to give. And I was invited to go to this conference with these women, and it's in rural Africa. And it was one of those things, David, where it's like, it made no sense. It was happening in a couple of weeks. I needed to rearrange my schedule, but there was that still small voice that said, you should do this. So I rearranged my schedule. I flew over there, and there were 40 women from North America congregating in a room where 400 women from East Africa, many of them walked days, babies on their back, you know, their family, you really can't hardly survive without them because they're fetching water and all that. But they were there looking for solutions. And as I sat there day after day listening to them talk about things I couldn't imagine, you know, the girls are fetching water, the kids are getting sick, they're dying of malaria, they're dying of diarrhea, like all of this stuff. And the first couple of days, I'm just feeling so overwhelmed with empathy. And then I started to get pissed off. And it's like, why is this okay? This is not okay. And I don't know anybody that I know talking about, you know, their kids dying of malaria or diarrhea or they're fetching water. And as I was leaving after 5 days, my heart was so open and I fell in love with these women and they were chanting something as we were saying goodbye. And I asked the interpreter, what are they saying? And he said, they're saying, please don't forget us. And I'm thinking, great. You know, like, who am I to even do anything? So I said, I will do something. I don't know what it is. And I think that's one of the, when you think of playbook, is do what you can with what you've got, with where you are. And so I was turning 50. I was actually kind of depressed about turning 50. I was single at the time, you know, first world problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Turning 50. A lot of people want to turn 50, live long enough to turn 50 in other countries. But I decided to turn that birthday party into a fundraiser. Again, it was like a purpose bigger than your pain. Whatever. It sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But I had this party and, you know, Bob Proctor came, Mary Morrissey came, like my dearest friends, Debbie Ford, and people that night thanked me for the opportunity to give. We ended up raising $80,000 and built two schools. And again, it was that night. It was one of the single most joyful days of my life. And that was it for me. I thought, okay, if I can do this in one night, what could I do if I actually put my mind to it? And so that's how it started. The intention, I don't think, was to have this big grand foundation, but it was like I made a promise that I needed to deliver on. And then it's just grown.
Right. And it's, you're drawn or pulled to the higher vibration. It's how I felt for me too, right? I didn't even want to take the phone call.
When I called
my mentor who started the Children's Miracle Network, one of the biggest philanthropists ever in the United States, asked you to take a phone call from someone that he tells me will change my life. The fear part of me being in the construct of human existence, I'm busy, too busy for another charity, for another person in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was almost intimidating how Joe Lake described you to me. And I remember specifically exactly where I was going, okay, 520 rule. You're going to give Cynthia 5 minutes. You're going to give her a little bit of money or an introduction, and you're going to get off this phone. And then it was the same calling or idea that I started out by just being a host committee member or something and falling in love. In fact, when I went to Africa to see what we were truly working on, and I don't think I was chairman yet.
No, you weren't.
I wasn't.
No, that's right.
Right, and I hadn't been asked. She tricked me. She said it would be an interim job. And then coming from USM, where she was educated, I thought, oh, interim means just this lifetime, I guess.
Yeah, right. That's funny.
This story I haven't shared, and I don't even think with you, and you probably know this story, but one of the cameramen who I love, Mikey, who he ran, we heard a big lion going to walk to the water, and we're by like cows and fences. Somehow, like a cow almost got out or didn't, but it was like a chain reaction with all the people.
They started screaming, right? I totally remember
that. Run! And like I'm with my wife and the oldest daughter who's tiny. She weighs like 70 pounds, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, Mike, the cameraman, instead of like protecting people, he like ran everybody over. So I teased him, like I like to do, the whole time, calling him Chicken Little, Chicken Mikey, whatever it was.
Oh,
and anyway, we share at the end of every day in Africa. And he told a story about how he lost his wife and child to preeclampsia. To something my wife had with my oldest. It hit me. I'm sitting there going, geez, how, like you were, how can I let this happen? Beyond what I was doing for Mama Jane and the girls and the schools, and they, I mean, it blew. I've never seen people more dedicated to education. Like I was to sports. Like my mom had to pull me off the streets not to play a sport. Right, you have to pull, especially these girls, off the classroom. Can
That's
we stay
right.
till 11 at night? Can we be here at 5 a.m.? I'm not going to stop. That's the way I was about sports. And I've never seen anyone, especially in America, that had such a passion to learn. But this one thing, I told my wife, I said, imagine. It was not even a big deal in America that my wife had preeclampsia.
Right.
She was not a danger. The baby was, Marissa, my oldest, was not a danger. And here, his whole life was impacted because of something we could change.
That's right.
And you look around here, there, in that perspective, I always say, be kind to your future self.
Yeah.
Do good deeds.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to do a good deed. I apologize. It doesn't work unless I cry. Feed the children. Call 1-800-DAVE. But it does mean that much to me. Mm-hmm, and I think more people need to understand what drives you, because we hear the little voices all the time.
Right.
But what do you do about it? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying give up your whole life. Yeah. I didn't hear a voice, your voice, by the way, and just come home and tell my wife, that's it. We're giving everything to Unstoppable. And still to this day, I don't give everything to Unstoppable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it evolves. It keeps growing. Right, keeps allowing more things to happen. Mm-hmm. And nothing has had a greater impact on my life than you, your husband, and the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's no accident. The flood of favor just keeps coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not why I do it. But I wanted other people to share that feeling that you had, and it transferred to me. And I know it impacts so many people. I joke around with Cynthia when I go to Africa now, like there's like all these little Cynthias. They all name their kids. That's how much impact. They name their children after you. I was joking around with them. I'm like, I just can't wait to see the first David. Just give me one, guys. I'm doing the best
like
I can.
I like that dream, though. That's a good dream. I will hold that with you.
I'm going to do it. Anyway, so this evolves into an extraordinary foundation.
Yeah,
tell me, I hate that word. Don't tell me. Share what we're doing and the impact we're having.
Right. Well, so the first thing is, of course, you know, when children aren't in school, whether you build a school. So basically I did some research and got, you know, billions of dollars are wasted building schools in developing countries, because in 5 years, if you're not addressing their nutritional needs, their healthcare needs, their the ability for their parents to generate an income, kids aren't in school, right? So these buildings are left empty. So it was like, okay, not only do we need to build schools, we got to provide clean water and sanitation, we need to provide healthcare and nutritious food. And so, you know, it was like this five-pillar model. And so I found a partner. And this is what I think is key. Don't try to do things by yourself.
Right.
You know, don't reinvent the wheel.
Ask for help.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I've gotten really good at asking and receiving. Because it's just not for me. It's like I realize it's just part of the flow. And that's why when I do ask, I do understand that you're going to receive.
Same thing works in business, by the way. I say it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Series of questions of how you can be of service or of value.
That's right.
But a series of questions of what other people can do for you.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And it feels great.
Yeah. For everyone.
Yeah. For everyone.
You're giving
everyone.
Them the opportunity.
I know. How do you say it?
You're giving them the opportunity.
That's right. It's
you're
the
blessing
truth.
Them it's by the allowing truth. Them to give.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So anyway, so basically we started with this five-pillar model. And then it was like, then we saw, okay, well, then what happens to the girls, right? They're getting married off when they finish primary school. So we thought we need to help build two high schools so they can continue high school. But then it's like only 0.5% of the kids can ever go to college. And predominantly, it's the boys that are going to Nairobi, and that's still a very small percentage. So we came with our partners and said, with We Charity, and said, we want to be a part of a college. And so 2 years ago, the Unstoppable Scholar Program was launched at We College. We're funding every single scholarship for they're becoming doctors, nurses, School of Agriculture, mechanics, tourism. Next year it's transportation, you know, civil engineering.
And when Dave Meltzer finally steps up, entrepreneurship.
That's right. No, that's coming too. That's right. Coming too. And we're doing that one as well, for sure. But it's like, and this is I'll share the Be the Miracle. But for me, it's like, okay, we started because you have to meet people where they are. You can't give them a freaking book and say, read this book about transforming your life if they're hungry. You know, if they're dying, you can't do that. But now they're to the point where we're really giving them the tools to achieve their dream through our leadership academy. So we have a 2-year leadership academy that started in the college, and then we have launched our first community center through you and your 50 for 50. And now parents, the communities are learning about the power of forgiveness, and they're learning about how to make restitution and how do you work together. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And even one of the other things I believe in is sharing the situational knowledge, not losing the tradition.
Exactly.
With a separateness that has occurred in the United States because of technology that, you know, as our children are utilizing different modes of communication as parents and grandparents, you could completely feel separate and ineffectuous.
Right.
And we need to understand and learn. And that's why I have such a big internship program. That's why I truly do. I want there to be shared knowledge. There's a lot of great pieces. Bob Proctor is 85 years old, and I sit for hours. It's the best dinners I've ever had, just taking notes. I know, I tell him, is it rude, but I need a pad of paper and a pen to have dinner with you. And he takes it as a huge compliment. But that's what those community centers were for me, is, hey, Grandpa, here's what I'm doing. How does this apply to human nature? Because you've been around a long time, right? And human nature never changes.
That's
if we don't understand human nature, I'm not going to be able to maximize the utilization of this unbelievable opportunity that Unstoppable has given me. That's where I saw that community aspect. And it really took off.
It really did. And now we're starting. Well, yeah. Thank you for your support. So you're
everyone
bringing,
has supported me.
That's right. Everybody who supported you through your 50 for 50. So now they're learning the tools. They never got to go to school, but they're learning tools that can empower them. They can learn how to generate an income more effectively. And, you know, they've been, I mean, there was this one family, because I think about forgiveness is so powerful. And literally, the tribes weren't even speaking to each other, you know, for many, many years, you know, about stealing their cattle and things like that. And he realized, he said, I realized by not forgiving them, I'm hurting my children. I'm hurting my children. And they went and they reconciled, which I think is so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, so those are just some of the things that are happening.
So now are we ready to talk about what I want to talk about?
Be the Miracle story. Okay. I love this. So, okay. Here's a student. Talk about a manifestation story. She lives in the Maasai Mara. And her parents, she's really a unique girl because her mom and dad both were committed to her getting an education. You know, most of them are primary school at best. They wanted her to go to high school.
Most of the stories we've told in the past are about these young women who have to like run away from their families because they're going to circumcise them and torture them and make them marry a guy my age.
Yeah. You know, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. Cynthia's now thinking it's bad enough somebody married this guy, but imagine if they were 14 and had to marry him. That is scary
Dave,
thought.
Seriously.
Poor Julie.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, I mean, it's not even a good example because you're such a great human being. These men, they're trying to survive. So the women are really moving into a life of servitude.
Right.
So when they're getting married, you know, they've got hopes for a better future, and they're married off to a cow, two cows, as a dowry.
Yeah.
And their life is over. So Betty's parents didn't want that for her. Right. So they said, we have got to keep you at least into high school. And unexpectedly, her father died when she was in the 10th grade. Within 1 week, the mom, all of the resources are gone. You know, they're barely, you know, surviving again. And Betty's like, Mom, I've got to come back home. This, you know, come on, I need to help you. And her mom said, no, your father and I, this is like this, we have committed to this. You are going to stay in school. And so she worked with her community. She was able to keep her in school. Betty graduates from high school, and her dream as a little girl was to become a nurse. But there was no college around where she could become a nurse. So what did she do? She went back home, lived with her mom, back to fetching water, fetching firewood, and selling and buying eggs. This is it. Smart little girl, no opportunity. For 6 years, that was her life. And one day it was like she lost all hope, and she's fetching water and she's going to the river, and she looks up in the heavens. She said, God, if this is my life, like if this is all there is, I don't want to live. And she saw that river and she was ready to jump in. There's snakes and crocodiles and hippos. But then she had another thought. She thought, well, what's my mom going to do if I kill myself? And what kind of an example am I going to be to my brothers and sisters? And what, this is the key, what if tomorrow there's a miracle and I'm not even here for it? And she decided that I'm not going to kill myself. I am going to wait for that miracle. 2 weeks later, a neighbor told her about Wee College and the scholarships. And guess what program the scholarships were for? Nursing. And Betty applied and got accepted into the nursing program. And when we brought her to LA for one of our events, and I actually couldn't even tell her story for 2 days. I was so emotional. But when I was sitting next to her, I said, Betty, your faith, you called us in. Like you, that she held that vision against all odds. And then I was thinking, I said, and it is such an honor to be a part of your miracle. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's what happens when you give. It's like the highest honor to be able to be a part of somebody else's dream in their life. And I mean, so then we came up with the Be the Miracle campaign. It's like, that's what we all are. We get to be the miracle and we get to be a part of somebody else's miracles. And the miracles just, they flow back and forth.
It's a currency, just like money.
That's it.
Money doesn't disappear, neither does miracles.
That's right.
That's why I like encourage people to have that black card of faith. To sit there. So many people, you know, my mission in life beyond supporting Unstoppable is to impact 1,000 people, to impact 1,000 people, to impact 1,000 people to be happy. Mm-hmm. Basically to have that faith to make this, everyone's going to sit on the side of a river at one time or another.
That's right.
And make that decision.
That's exactly it. And it's like, do I even care? I mean, that's what I loved it so much, because I certainly could resonate with that. And there are people, it's like, is this all there is? And it isn't, right? But so many people throw in the towel. And the miracle is right out there. Like, what if tomorrow, what if I quit today? And tomorrow, that miracle is going to be there for me and I quit.
To bring this full circle into the entrepreneurial space, what if Cynthia Kersey would have just stayed in her corner office working for Sprint? Never really would know or impact hardly anyone. Probably lived a very comfortable life. Not nearly as, you know, challenging as it was for Betty.
Right.
But I believe spiritually, emotionally, it would have been as great of a loss as if Betty would have thrown herself into the river. So all of us aren't in the place, although more of us, you know, suicide is way out of control, anxiety, depression, opiate addiction, all related to happiness. Sometimes you do have to just make the decision and wait for that miracle and do everything that you can for allowing it to happen. And I'm just so grateful that you came here, taught those lessons that are entrepreneurial lessons, those life lessons of what it takes to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential by helping other people's and allowing the flood of favor to come into your life. And I know it has. I know your husband, your children, your grandchildren, and you live an abundant, beautiful life that is going to be remembered through others forever, which is awesome. And I just love you and thank you for coming
on.
This is Dave Meltzer with his mentor, and so proud to have the founder of Unstoppable, entrepreneur, author, and really dear friend, Cynthia Kersey. Entrepreneurs, the playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.